Hey there, boys and girls. Welcome to another edition of the Business of Sports with Andrew Brandt. We're presented, as always, by DraftKings. It's a very important business of sports. I wanted to talk about Peng Shuai, who is the Chinese women's tennis player who has... There's a lot of concern for her safety, and it's been that way for over a month now. And I wanted to get someone that's done some reporting on it and really talk about it. So we're going to have a special guest, Matthew Futterman of the New York Times, talking about Peng Shuai, what's going on in China, where her whereabouts and the concerns, and the WTA, how they help Women's Tennis Association, how have they dealt with this. We're going to get to all that. But first, a word from LinkedIn Talent Solutions. These days, it can be hard to find and hire the right candidates for your small business. You can create a free job post in minutes. LinkedIn Jobs, you can reach your network, the world's largest professional network, 770 million people on LinkedIn. Use those simple tools, quickly filter, prioritize who you'd like to interview and hire. That's why small businesses rate LinkedIn Jobs the number one job site in delivering quality hires and leading competitors. So LinkedIn Jobs helps you find the candidates you want to talk to faster. Do you know every week nearly 40 million job seekers visit LinkedIn? So post your job for free at linkedin.com/BOS, Business of Sports. That's linkedin.com/BOS to post your job for free. Terms and conditions apply. Without further ado, I want to get to our special guest talking about Peng Shuai's situation in China, the women's tennis player who has not been seen, at least in a way that people feel comfortable with her safety. So here we go. Matthew Futterman from the New York Times. Matt, always great to talk to you. Actually, before we get to our topic at hand, I want to let you know you're one of the people I follow when it comes to running. I just did a half marathon. And for me, that's like running across the country.
That's outstanding.
Yeah. I'm a short distance guy, a triathlon guy. So I'm in Dallas. My son's here in college. We spent Thanksgiving together. So I hung around and I did the Dallas half yesterday. And it was quite an experience.
That's great. That's great. A half is such a great distance because it's like you don't quite get to the point where you're totally worn out. Or at least I don't generally. or a lot of people don't. But it's sort of like, feels like, I mean, first of all, the word marathon is in it, so yeah. That's good. And it's like, it feels enough so that you really accomplish something, you know, like something big, yeah. but you don't kill yourself. So, but I'm proud.
Yeah,
I'm very proud of you.
Yeah, unfortunately, I did kill myself.
Okay.
You know, I like a lot of everyone, you know, I had a coach and we talked about a plan on Saturday and I totally went against the plan because, you know, the adrenaline and all that, I went out way too fast. And
yeah.
I was hoping, you know, to come in with an 8-minute pace. And I went out, and my third mile was like 7:01. And I'm like, yeah. And that third mile cost me later because I was hurting.
Yeah. Doesn't plan the race and race the plan. That's the, yes. That's the thing.
Yeah. It's the best of plans, right?
Right.
Moving to a more serious topic, I've seen your work and I've heard you on the Daily Podcast. Before we get to the matter at hand, tell our listeners, if you would, sort of a background, Peng Shuai, and tell me if I'm pronouncing that wrong.
It's Peng Shuai.
Peng Shuai.
Yes.
Who she is, her background, and sort of everything before we get to November.
Okay, so Peng Shuai is 35 years old. She has long been one of the most famous tennis players in China and also one of the most famous athletes in China. She is sort of that generation of players that really brought the sport to China and really sort of into the limelight. She and Lina, who was a singles Grand Slam champion. Peng Shuai was never a singles Grand Slam champion, but she won the Wimbledon doubles championship and she won the French Open doubles championship. And so she is, I mean, she's been described as the golden flower, a Chinese princess. She's really like sort of as big as it gets she's not Yao Ming, but she's not that far off from being Yao Ming because China doesn't have that many massive international sports champions. So she was held in really, really high regard for a long time. Was still actively playing professional tennis until the pandemic. She hasn't played since then. And then, you know, we come to November 2nd.
She did a post. And what is their social media? Obviously, it's not what we're used to dealing with here. What is the name of that?
I may mispronounce it. Is it Weibo or Weibo? Weibo, yes, which is sort of their equivalent of, I guess, Facebook and, you know, what? It's just a massive, and Facebook, Instagram. It's a really, really big social media hub in China. I think she has, you know, more than 500,000 followers. And so she goes on Weibo and she sort of posts what I guess we used to call a blog item about a sort of on and off again affair she had with a former top Communist Party official, one of the members of the 7-member ruling committee of the country, the one that Xi Jinping now leads. And she talks about that relationship, the sort of ugliness of that relationship. For him, it was an extramarital affair, and that it seems to have come to a very ugly conclusion 3 years ago, when, according to her, he sexually assaulted her after they played tennis. And he did so, I think, at her home with her. His wife was present at the same time in the house. It's just sort of really ugly. And she talks about, you know, feeling like an egg hitting a stone, a moth to a flying too close to a fire. And it just reads like the words of someone who's in a great deal of distress, as sexual assault victims often are.
Now, I know things get lost in translation, but in this post on Weibo in November, did she actually accuse him of a certain level of sexual assault? I mean, you mentioned some of the details just there, but how detailed did she get about what he actually did to her?
She didn't want to have sex with him, and he ended up having sex with her, using a variety of techniques, coercion. There was a guard, apparently a guard outside the door, and, you know, she didn't get into, you know, too detailed about use of force, but, you know, at bottom line, she didn't want to do this, and he did it anyway. And she clearly expressed that resistance to him.
If the story ended there, Matt, how shocked would you be that she posted this?
I mean, I'm no expert in, you know, in Chinese policy and in the Chinese government, but I do know that it's pretty rare for average citizens to take on top officials in the Chinese government, and you sort of do so at your own risk. I mean, you just don't really speak out against the government in China. I don't know. There must be instances where they don't do much, but that those instances seem to be few and far between these days. And I think, you know, maybe she felt that her notoriety gave her a certain amount of leverage or protection. And it probably does to some extent, although there's some pretty high profile Chinese citizens, notably Jack Ma, who sort of seemingly suffered some repercussions for speaking out against the government.
Yeah.
So
speaking of which,
yeah.
How long did this stay up and what happened?
Stayed up for about, I think, 15 or 20 minutes. It was taken down almost immediately. And the Chinese, you know, they didn't just, they took down this post that you couldn't search for her name without hitting dead ends for a while. Sometimes when you would search the word tennis, you would hit a dead end. I mean, they did everything possible that they could to just sort of wipe wipe this and wipe her from digital life in China. And, you know, in addition to that, people even said that they would be talking about the situation in a chat group, and all of a sudden, you know, their chat group would get zapped out. So, I mean, I think we all know that China's surveillance of social media and people's use of it is sort of off the charts. But this just gives you an idea of how off the charts it actually is and how deep it can go when they want it to go deep. So, you know, that was what happened in China. But, you know, this thing spread across the worldwide internet very quickly. And so it made its way, around the world. And so a lot of it just spread. And so a lot of people knew very quickly that Peng Shuai had done this very sort of courageous thing and had very quickly suffered some pretty serious repercussions from it. And I think there was an immediate concern, given how China had reacted so strongly to the post, that, you know, what was going to happen next. And I think a lot of people's worst fears were then realized.
So this is out there through captured screens from around the world. Obviously, it's scrubbed in China. And then do we get to the point then, and you can take us through the timeline in terms of the concern expressed by Western entities and the hostage note that came from Peng Shuai after this. So yeah. What's the timeline there?
I don't think hostage note is too strong, and we'll get to that. But having said that, I mean, I think it was sort of, there was a lot of initial coverage and then things went kind of quiet. We sort of move on to the next story a little bit, well, if nothing's seemingly happening on another story. But then about 10 days after, it was in the middle of the WTA Tour Finals in Guadalajara, Mexico, a tournament that was supposed to happen in China but was moved because of COVID. Steve Simon, who's the head of the WTA, really goes public with a very harsh stance about China and just says, and it goes out there and he says, I've been trying to get in touch with this woman, one of my players, one of the professional tennis players, not his players. I've been trying to get in touch with her for, almost 2 weeks at this point, and I can't. And, you know, it's very clear they have a lot of channels of communication in normal times. If they want to get in touch with her, they've got cell phones and emails and friends and associates. Right. Agents and all kinds of things like that. And they are not able to get a response from her. And they're really concerned about it. And he says, you know, we're really concerned about not being able to get in touch with her. We really think these allegations are incredibly serious. You know, there needs to be a full and transparent investigation of what exactly went on there. And if they don't do all these things, then we're going to consider taking our tournaments out of China. Permanently. And that's hitting pretty hard. I mean, people have spoken out against China before, but it's very rare that a company or an organization says, we're not going to do any business with the largest country on the planet.
Folks, you know about Keeps.com. 2 out of 3 men experience some form of hair loss by the time they're 35. And more than 50 million men in the U.S. suffer from male pattern baldness. Now, there's only 2 FDA-approved medications that can prevent hair loss. Keeps offers both of them. It's a simple, stress-free way to keep your hair. You have convenient virtual doctor consultations and medications delivered straight to your door every 3 months. You don't have to leave your house. Low cost, $10 a month they start at. Offers generic versions as well. Discreet packaging, proven results. More 5-star reviews than any competitors in this space. So if you're ready to take action, prevent hair loss, go to keeps.com/BOS for Business of Sports. Receive your first month of treatment for free. That's keeps.com/BOS. Get your first month free. keeps.com/BOS. So this is happening, and this is the sort of the business of sports angle here with WTA director Simon saying this. How much business are we talking about, Matt, in terms of tournaments and ballpark money?
So it's 9 tournaments, including the Tour Finals, which is a very prestigious tournament at the end of the year. So only the top 8 players make it. And there's a lot of money in that tournament generally. That tournament, you know, the purse for that tournament in 2019, the last time it was held in China, was $14 million, which is a pretty high purse for just 8 players. But beyond that, there's a ton of investment in tennis in China as a result of the commitments that China has made to the WTA, not just to play those 9 tournaments, but also to build facilities and just grow the game in China. Steve Simon estimated at the time when he signed the deal with China and launched it back about 3 or 4 years ago, he estimated that the promise of investment was upwards of $1 billion over the next decade. And, you know, that would include, that obviously includes that huge amount of prize money committed to the players. And it's a steep drop off because, you know, China as a developing country pays a premium to get an organization like the WTA to come and hold events there. And so, for instance, the prize money, like I said, was $14 million in 2019. This year it was in Guadalajara. And yes, it was put together on kind of a last minute basis in the summer when they knew they were going to have to move it. The prize money was only $5 million. So you sort of multiply that out over lots of tournaments and lots of years, you very quickly get into, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars of direct cash that comes from China. And then tens, if not hundreds of millions of dollars more in sort of indirect investment in terms of, like I said, building facilities and growing the game.
You know, it's interesting. I can't help but think about the other situation, which is certainly not directly on point, but the NBA. So for people who, I'm sure some followed, some didn't, Daryl Morey's tweet a couple of years ago about the Hong Kong situation, and the NBA immediately sort of pulled that back, realizing the important business partnership they have with China that was fractured during that time. Do you see parallels in those situations? At least, I mean, obviously the NBA did not do to the extent that the WTA is talking about.
Yeah, I think you sort of wonder what if there had not been a pandemic, what would have happened with the NBA? Would they, a year later in 2020, would they have had exhibition games in China, which had sort of become part and parcel to the preseason? What really would have been the ramifications in that sense? As it was, even though their initial statement was that Morey's tweet was, you know, Morey's tweet, and there's some, you know, the NBA will tell you that no, it wasn't the tweet that was regrettable. It was regrettable that the tweet insulted lots of Chinese people and their fans. And, you know, they sort of get into this semantic battle to try and explain that. And then ultimately under pressure from a lot of people reasserted their players and executives' rights to free speech.
Right.
That, you know, we would think they would just wouldn't have to be said in this country. But, you know, that's sort of where they ended up. And they still ended up being, you know, punished. The games taken off
right.
China Central Television. They stream games now through one of the Chinese streaming services. So I don't know how much of a punishment it is to be taken off television. But Adam Silver does estimate that the cost the NBA $300 million that in terms of, I guess, media contracts and other kinds of agreements. Like I said, it would have been interesting to see if they would have had exhibition games there, or if they will be able to have exhibition games there when life returns to some semblance of normal. So it's a different situation NBA is a lot bigger organization, about $10 billion right. a year as opposed to WTA. But, you know, that's a there's only so many tennis tournaments and only so many weeks in a year. And to be holding nine of them in one country is a lot of exposure.
So at this point, that's a threat, right, Matt? I mean, that's there's no tournaments that have passed since these events have transpired. And where are we? I mean, we've sort of glossed over the fact that you can now talk about the hostage letter and the conversation with the IOC director, Thomas Bach, as we again are a month away from the Olympics. So there's been stuff going on, but after we get to that, after you explain a little more of that, I want to see sort of where we are today.
So what happens after that is just sort of a very disturbing few days of reactions from the Chinese. The first thing they do is they release this email that starts, this is Peng Shuai, and it sort of goes on to basically recant everything she said in her previous blog post. And it just seems completely clear that it's not written by her. So that's the first disturbing thing. And that
there's like a picture of a cursor in the email.
Yeah. It's just really sloppy and, it's ridiculous. And nobody believes it, raises the levels of concern because she still hasn't been seen or heard from, day or two after that, there's a Chinese journalist who posts pictures of her sitting in a bedroom, smiling, surrounded by stuffed animals, another picture of her holding, with a cat. It's unclear when those pictures are taken. He claims they're from that day because people are asking, we need to see her alive. Can we see her holding a newspaper? I mean, it's gotten to that level and that doesn't work. And then finally there's this video that comes out of her at a Beijing restaurant, not looking very happy to be there with a Chinese tennis official, sort of talking about a tournament, making reference to the dates, November 19th, November 20th, November 21st, today, tomorrow, sort of trying to establish this as like a proof of life video. But again, it's she's not alone. She's not speaking freely. She's not independent. It's put out by the government-controlled media. And then the next day she appears at a youth tennis tournament and she's signing autographs but once again, this is a very controlled environment and she's seemingly not free. And then, a tried and true strategy for China when they're on the ropes is they call on a reliable friend. And in this case, the reliable friend is the International Olympic Committee, which is bringing the Winter Games there in February. And it's itself getting in hot water because it's been so quiet about right. this situation and hasn't sort of spoken out and seemingly used any leverage to on behalf of her safety and to establish her safety. And it's the Sunday. It's a week later. It's a week since Steve Simon has spoken out. And the IOC releases a statement that Thomas Bach, its president, has held a video conference call with her that day, and all's well, she's fine, she's safe, she's resting, she's in Beijing, they make plans to have dinner. There's no transcript of the call, there's no video of the call, there's no mention of a sexual assault, there's nothing about any of the allegations, and it's the kind of thing that, China, it's gold because it can put it out to its people. And I think that's their main audience here. They don't seem to care so much what the Western media thinks of them. What they need to do is they need to keep their people in line. And, so they get what they need out of the IOC. And Steve Simon says, well, that's great. I'm glad she's seemingly alive and can have dinner next month, but she's still not speaking freely. There's still no investigation going on. So no, this doesn't satisfy me at all. And I think it's interesting also about one other detail about the call is that there's a Chinese tennis official on there who's a member of the IOC, someone who's, you know, deeply embroiled in China's government structure. And then there's also someone who's described as a friend of Peng Shuai to help her with her English. Mm-hmm. But from all accounts, Peng Shuai speaks perfectly fine English. So why does she need this quote unquote friend there to monitor the discussion and the conversation? I think anyone who's continuing to be concerned is justified in feeling that way. And, you know, after that, several more days pass. Steve Simon has said he's continuing to, you know, press on every avenue he can to try and get in touch with her. And finally, you know, the calendar flips to December and he decides enough is enough. And he says, all right, we're suspending all our business in China, certainly our tournaments in China. I don't think at this point, I'm sure they don't have very much other business, but we're suspending our tournaments in China until, you know, like you said before, we speak with her and until there's a full and open and transparent investigation into these allegations, because, you know, doing any less would be to, you know, not treat women as equal, and equality is sort of the founding principle of the WTA tour.
We'll be back to Matt and this interesting conversation in a moment. First, a word from Cuts Clothing. Guys, work attire has changed. You don't have to wear stuffy, uncomfortable clothes anymore. Cuts Clothing is the best thing I have seen in terms of reimagined work clothes. You can wear them anytime. It's holidays are busy now. You can wear polos, bomber jackets, joggers, make it more easy to do what you want to do year round. It's this minimalist design. It's professional enough for the office, yet comfortable enough for a night out. Cuts combines versatility with style. You can look good for any occasion. I use it for all just hanging around, and I use it for meetings as well. So Cuts has your holiday shopping covered with a lot of new products, special site-exclusive offers every day in December. Plus, you get $15 off site-wide at cutsclothing.com/BOS. That's Business of Sports. Once again, cutsclothing.com/BOS. Get 15% off, plus can't-miss daily deals. That's cutsclothing.com/BOS to get 15% off, plus can't miss daily deals. That's cutsclothing.com/BOS. When would be the next tournament the WTA would host?
So I think next fall is, and they have time. The next fall is really the Asia swing happens in the tennis calendar for the women. The Asia swing happens after the US Open. Tennis is kind of like this worldwide traveling circus that sort of moves from continent to continent throughout the year, beginning in Australia, then coming to the U.S. and moving to Europe for the clay and grass, then coming back to the U.S. for the hard court season, and then going to Asia for the last few months. And so, you know, there is time, but there's also time for the WTA to find some alternatives. And that's what they're doing right now. I don't think they're planning on being in China next fall. I think what they're planning on doing is being somewhere else and trying to find, you know, a good business opportunity elsewhere besides China.
Will Peng Shuai have an opportunity to speak at some point? Is she on the roster, so to speak, of the Olympic team?
I mean, we're coming up to the Winter Games, so she wouldn't be playing she wouldn't be playing tennis in the Summer Games. She is a 3-time Olympian. So she wouldn't be in the Winter Games, but there's,
you know, but she'd be some kind of ceremonial. You would
in
think.
In normal times, you would think that a 3-time Olympian like her might participate. Someone who's so popular might participate in the opening ceremony or something like that. But would certainly also be a presence. And, I think that's highly doubtful at this point. I mean, I would love to see it. It would make me feel better about covering the Olympics. This happened, you know, over a week ago in terms of removing the, suspending business in China, and she still doesn't have any kind of public presence.
So as someone close to the story, you're concerned for her safety.
Absolutely. I mean, I think that's the first concern. You'd like to see allegations like this addressed in a kind of serious way, in the same way that that there'd be some of course you'd like to see due process for the accused, but at the same time I think we've shown that you can have due process for the accused and also have allegations be investigated.
Yeah, I don't want this question to come off the wrong way, and I don't know if there's a way it won't, but Peng Shuai knows the system, right? So on November, whatever it was, does she not expect ramifications and repercussions from something like that?
I mean, I don't know. I can't get inside her head. All we have is the words that she wrote.
Yeah.
And, there's a reference in there, in those words, where she says that she doesn't really feel like she's worth living, her life is worth living, but she doesn't have the courage to die.
Wow.
Which is, I don't even know if that's a veiled suicide thought, but it certainly sort of references that. It sounds like what she's saying is, I'd like to kill myself, but I'm scared to do it. And so it's hard to say, what she's really thinking about her future or whether she cares about what her future looks like. So, that's something that, reading those words will kind of stick with me forever. Yeah. They're really, really sad.
It's a sad and disturbing story. I guess my last question is someone powerful. So we know there's threats or talk. I don't know if it's, President Biden talking about a diplomatic boycott, excuse me. And is anybody at the higher levels looking into this in a way that shows some exertion of power?
Are you talking about the higher levels of China or the higher levels of the Western?
Our country, any other country?
Well, our country can't. The United States announced that it was going to have a diplomatic boycott of the Beijing Games, which means the athletes are going to go. We're going to field a team, but we're not sending any government officials, which is something that generally countries do as sort of a sign of respect for the host nation.
Right.
And, the Olympics are supposed to be about peace and governments coming together. And so it's really almost nothing but good PR usually for politicians to attend at least the opening ceremony of the Olympic Games. So the United States announced it wouldn't do that, not merely because of Peng Shuai, but also because, we have terrible relations with China at this moment, given their crackdowns in Hong Kong and elsewhere in the country, given their treatment of the Uyghurs and other Muslim minorities in the country. So we announced that we're doing that, and Australia, Canada, and Great Britain have done the same. Also Lithuania, though Lithuania didn't use the word boycott. Notably, France has said it won't do it. France is the host of the 2024 Olympic Games, so they're sort of getting in line. They had a big announcement on Monday,
right,
that they're going to, hold their opening ceremonies, having athletes float down the Seine River. They're seemingly trying to, and in concert with the IOC, working to try and have a parallel narrative of sort of brightness and openness attached to the Olympics compared with what we're looking at right now, which is everybody going to China basically and experiencing 3 weeks of captivity because of the very, very strict COVID restrictions they're going to have there, the protocols we all have to follow, but also they're not letting in any international spectators. This is sort of not what an Olympic Games is supposed to look like. And in addition to that, you know, human rights are kind of supposed to be at the core of the Olympic Charter. And, you know, the Olympics are, once again, going to a pretty intensely authoritarian nation.
I want to just touch back on what you said about diplomatic boycott for reasons of the Uyghurs and reasons of human rights violations. But has there been anything stated that part of that is due to Peng Shuai?
They have not referenced Peng Shuai directly in relation to the boycott. They just said, you know, because of their human rights violations. The Jen Psaki, the White House press secretary, has referenced the White House's concern over Peng Shuai.
Okay.
In mid-November, they referenced her directly. So, you know, that is, it is on their radar screen. It would be impossible for this not to be on their radar screen. And like I said, the other side of the spectrum, you have, you know, a lot of athletes, sports organizations, and government officials sort of trying to have it both ways, trying to say, including, and I should say, including men's tennis in the ATP Tour, which is someone a group that you would expect would have a great deal of solidarity with the women's tour. And they've sort of expressed concern about this, but they haven't taken any moves to, you know, remove tournaments or to put any weight behind that. So I think that's a matter of great disappointment among a lot of people and a lot of people in the tennis world. But also in addition to beyond that, you know, you have, like I said, lots of other organizations, including the IOC, you know, sort of initially saying, expressing concern, but then, you know, not doing much more than that.
Yeah, like you said earlier, it kind of ebbs and flows. It was hot for a while in terms of news, then it wasn't. Then I remember the hashtags with Serena Williams and others. And as you said, everything moves on to another story. But as we leave, and I so appreciate your time, just sort of what you have expressed concern that we should all have for her safety. And I guess the question is, what can allay our concern, and do you think it can happen?
I mean, I think the only thing that would allay a lot of people's concerns is if Peng Shuai is out of the country at some point. And like I said, I'm a sports writer. I'm not a China expert, but you know, I read the news. I know people who live there, who have lived there, and the country is going in the other direction right now. Things are getting harsher in China. Things are getting bleaker from a human rights perspective. So I don't expect to see Peng Shuai freely moving about the country and speaking freely or showing up at tennis tournaments outside of China anytime soon. If she does, it would be a great relief. I'm not getting a lot of signals that's something that we should expect.
Well, we're more than 2 months away, as you reference. But do you
think a little under 2 months at this point?
Or a little under 2 months.
February 4th is the opening ceremony.
Do you think we'll see her? Do you think we, you know, the international audience will see her?
Well, you, like I said, they're seeing her and then they're seeing her.
In the Olympic events,
if they trot her out, she's going to be accompanied. She's still in her country. She'll still be surrounded by, you know, Chinese government officials, but, you know, by very definition, because it's an Olympic, because it'll be an Olympic event. And so, yes, they may trot her out in a sort of nothing to see here kind of way, or in order to treat her, you know, to treat her as something that they can show to their people. to convince them that, you know, they're sort of benign, they can be benign and benevolent, but it's, you know, that won't, like I said, I don't think that will satisfy a lot of people on this side of the, on this side of the ocean.
Unless, I'm just trying to think off the top of my head, unless she does some kind of sit down interview with Western media, but even that, I would think she'd be accompanied and advised.
Yeah, probably. And I mean, if we're talking about in China, yeah, certainly. Look, the Australian Open is in January. She's not, I don't think she's signed up to play at this point. You know, she hasn't really played any tournaments. But, you know, if she showed up at the Australian Open, that would be a good sign.
Yeah.
You know, that's sort of a gathering of, that's a gathering of the tennis world with lots of, you know, lots of neutral parties in close proximity. So, in a normal year, she might very well have shown up at the Australian Open, either to play or just to be around. But, you know, I don't expect her to be in Melbourne next month.
Yeah. All right, my friend, this is, I hate to leave our audience without a happy ending at this point, but that's where we are. And
these are complicated times. Yeah. This is going to be a complicated Olympics. I expect that a lot of Americans certainly are just going to tune them out, you know, out of sort of just some level of disgust, which is just really too bad for a lot of athletes who have spent a lifetime preparing for this moment. You know, most people don't go to more than one Olympics. Most people just get one. And to have worked this hard and this to be the one that you got is just kind of bad. It's some pretty serious bad luck. Maybe though it'll inspire a bunch of people to hang around another 4 years to go to Italy. I mean, if there is sort of a bright light you want to leave people with.
Yeah.
If people care about this, you know, the Olympics are not going back to that part of the world anytime soon. We've come out of a pretty bad spurt of Olympic games going to back to 2014, where first you were in Russia. Russia started a war in the middle of the Olympics. They invaded Crimea at that point, while the games were going on. Then the games were in Rio in 2016, which just turned into a complete disaster because the country was sort of in economic turmoil and was just seen as a just total boondoggle and waste of money. The organizer has now been sentenced to 30 years in prison or something like that. Many, many years in prison for paying and seeking bribes. And then the Korea in 2018, a lot of people don't even remember. We were sort of, it seemed like they were on the brink of nuclear war between in the run up to those games. Again, it wasn't a place that anybody in much of the world sort of wanted to go to. All artificial snow, just sort of inorganic. Then you had Tokyo in the midst of the pandemic when 80% of Japan did not want the games to be held last summer. They went ahead with them anyway, with no crowds. It was about the most joyless sporting event I've ever attended. Yeah. And now we're coming to China, which, you know, speaks for itself as to what it is. And there's not a lot of high hopes for that. But coming out of China, you'll go to Paris, then Italy in 2026 for the Winter Games, then LA for the Summer Games in 2028. They haven't chosen a site for 2030. It looks like it'll either be Vancouver or Salt Lake City, and then 2032 in Brisbane, Australia.
It is making a turn.
Yes, it seems like it's going away from both developing nations and authoritarian regimes.
Yeah,
probably a good idea for the Olympics at this point after everything they've been through. But these are all self-inflicted wounds. So
yeah. Well, Matthew, thank you again for explaining this whole situation with Peng Shuai. And, you know, I don't want to make this hashtaggy, but we pray for Peng Shuai and sort of like you. I think we all want to feel like she's safe and somewhere in one way or another. And I don't know how that way is going to happen, but we'll hope.
I'll just keep writing. We'll just keep writing about it and keep whatever pressure is on and just get, all we can do is, all you can do as a journalist is just, you know, hold powerful people to account and hope that shame has plays some role in it.
Yeah. Thanks for speaking this truth to the power, and thanks for coming on the podcast and giving me some running advice too.
Okay. Anytime. Thanks so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
If you're more of a today person, want to get what you need ASAP, then worry about it in the future. You can order online, pick it up fast, free same day store pickup. No waiting in line, no shopping through the store for 20 minutes because you can't find a part or you refuse to ask for help. That sounds like me. Or you're more of a tomorrow person on a job that can wait. You can order what you need on AutoZone with free next day delivery. You can even order as late as 10 p.m. and your package will arrive the next day right on time. Like if it's late, you don't realize you forgot something, you need it for the job, and don't feel like going back to the store because you're too tired. Hey, sounds like me again. Every car is different, and that means every car's job is different. That's why AutoZone offers you more way to shop your way for your car. Oh, and they've also got 6,000 stores nationwide. Help you at a moment's notice. You've got that going for you too, which is nice. So next time you're starting a job with your car, start by shopping your way at AutoZone. Free same day pickup and free next day delivery. Get in the zone, AutoZone. And that'll do it for this week's edition of The Business of Sports with Andrew Brand, a special edition, a story that's been disturbing and troubling, and hopefully we brought it to you in a way that you understand it, you can figure it out, and see what's happening as we follow it further, as we get ready for the entire sporting world to descend on China in February for the Winter Olympics. Follow me on Twitter at Andrew Brand, Instagram Andrew Brand 2, Clubhouse ADB719, my Sunday newsletter. Hope you're getting it. If you're not, please do. It is at Andrew-Brandt is where you sign up, Andrew-Brandt.com. Also in there, have a holiday idea for you if you want to buy even more content from me. Thanks to my producer, Brian Neal. Thanks to my music producer, Sam Brandt. You hear that music underscoring us. Apple Podcasts and ratings are always appreciated. Give us a good review. And we'll be back next week with another edition of The Business of Sports with Andrew Brown.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.